Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Final hour here on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5. The game coming up at 1:30. Mitch Light from The Athletic. We're going to talk about the issue of NIL. What do coaches think behind the scenes? We'll get his perspective. What in the world are they going to do about this? The genie is way out of the bottle here. Our call and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You can always reach out to us there. Haven't had a lot of things to get to listener reaction today. Of course, you get some big stories. The golf merger between the LIV and the PGA, that is a big story. Some other local news, or with the college baseball thing going, the news came out this morning. Maybe people didn't catch it. Tennessee and Southern Miss were both two seeds in the NCAA Super Regionals. They had to decide who should host, which is big. Because Tennessee has been lights out at home. They are way, way better, although they won the regional away from home. But Southern Miss will host. I do wonder about that. The SEC is so dominant, right? As you got 16 teams left. The SEC could have four in the World Series. They will have a minimum of two, because two of the Super Regionals are SEC versus SEC.
Oh, okay.
Alabama is a 16 seed, and they're playing the number one team, Wake Forest. That will be interesting after all of the, speaking of gambling, all of Alabama's baseball issues. If they win two out of three, they're going to Omaha, despite all of that. And then you've got Tennessee against Southern Miss. So the league could get four. I wonder how, if they weighed, well, did we really want four teams out of eight from the same league here? We'd like to spread it around a little bit. Yeah. So let's make Tennessee go on the road. I do wonder if that was anything politically behind the scenes there. But we'll never know.
Just a flip of the coin.
We'll never know. So Tennessee's got to go on the road down to Southern Miss. NBA Finals, we didn't get a chance to talk to you about that yesterday, Derek, but I was pretty impressed with what Miami did to even up that series.
Yeah, they played a lot harder. They were more locked in from a defensive standpoint. And this is what we've seen from the Heat from a defensive standpoint. They may be the best defensive team, you know, that were in the playoffs consistently. Now, the Lakers, their defensive efficiency during the season, at least the second half of the season, was really good. And then it was good in the playoffs until they ran into Denver. And then that defensive efficiency went out the window. The first game, Miami didn't play well. Denver had their way with them. Nikola Jokic proved why he is a two-time MVP in this league. His ability to not only shoot but facilitate the offense. Murray, his ability to come off pick, shoot mid-range, shoot from three, drive to the hole, finish the basket. He's just a guy that was able to get buckets throughout the playoffs, even in the first game. I think the second game, they locked in a little bit more. They still, those open jump shots they got in the first game but were missing, they got some of those same open jump shots they were hitting this time, and that was the big thing with Miami. They got a bunch of shots the first game, but they just wasn't falling.
Yeah.
And they couldn't, for whatever reason, they were a little bit laxed on defense, miscommunication with the switches and the pick and rolls with Nikola Jokic. But they did a better job in the second quarter, the second game.
Jokic had 41 points and only had four assists, so they definitely covered him differently. That was something that's been broken down. They just said, okay, he's going to get a lot of points, but we want to make sure it's harder on Murray, harder on the other guys. So we'll
see
how
they didn't want to do a lot of doubling of Nikola Jokic.
Yeah.
They still play tough defense on him, but he's unstoppable.
And they used Kevin Love, right? That was the other thing. They went bigger.
Now we're going to see what adjustments Malone makes after Spoelstra made those adjustments in game two.
And the other thing, I would curious to see your take on this. The biggest soundbite that came out of game two was Malone saying we had a lack of effort in the NBA final.
Yeah,
he called his own team out, and I don't think anybody was asking him about the effort. He sort of brought it up. He said, why aren't we working as hard as we should?
That's one of those deals. You know it, Willie. Yeah, I mean, you've been in sports, and you've seen sports long enough. It was one of those things to try to get his team motivated, you know, because in the first three periods, you can say they were playing inspired basketball because they were dominating. You know, they were up as many as double-digit points against the Heat. And it looked like
they had control.
Yeah, they looked like they had control the whole game. So I think that was more so, you know, hey, listen, we gotta match intensity with intensity four quarters. Because Miami's, they're always going to find a way to come back in a game. We may end up beating them in the end, but they're going to find a way to claw back because they have those type of players. You know, those grind out players, guys that were not drafted, guys that are still trying to prove themselves in this league. And they got shooters, you know, guys that can shoot from the outside. That first game wasn't indicative of how they've been shooting in the playoffs. Now, they were not a great shooting team during the season, but when they got in the playoffs, they became a lot better. Hopefully Tyler Hero can come back this series.
Something to watch for.
So, you know, I can't wait to see this next game. Game three, when is it?
Tomorrow night.
The adjustments that are made, will Spoelstra stick with Kevin Love, or will he mix it up just a little bit to try to throw Malone off?
Spoelstra is looking more and more like a coaching legend the more these things. He's winning over, like, for historical purposes. You know, he is getting like, hey,
if he finds a way to win with this team, and this is not a bad team, but it's not a team that should realistically beat Denver. If he wins with this team, you got to put him up there as the best one of the. If not, he has to be behind like a Steve Kerr. Right,
he's got to be right up there. Yeah. He doesn't get mentioned, but he should start getting mentioned with those guys. Mm-hmm. It's harder for a guy that was sort of a no name. wasn't a player. Right?
Exactly.
It's easier for Steve Kerr because we remember him as a player. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting discussion there. So Miami gets the split in the NBA Finals. The South Florida representative in the Stanley Cup Finals. It got worse.
They got ugly.
They got whipped last night. They were right in Game One, even though the final score was 5-2. That was a close game. That could have gone either way. Last night was not a close game. Mm-hmm. Vegas really ripped him up. So that is going to be something to watch for. Can we get a series here? Can Florida get it done? Nick, it was ugly last night. What the heck?
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
I'm sitting there going, hey, look, I got nothing to do. I'm going to kick back on this Monday night. Let's see a good game. And it was over midway through
this. Bad. And look, all 18 skaters for the Golden Knights were on strength for an even strength goal.
Even strength.
All of them. Every single one of them. Oh, and in four periods, Bobrovsky has given up more goals, 7, than he gave up in the Carolina series.
They chased Bob last night. Bob had a rough night. And it wasn't all on him, but this is going to be interesting. Mm-hmm. Vegas is playing so well, and this is something that, like Robbie and Joe have been talking about this. It's amazing. We asked Skillsy about this. They've had 5 different goalies, Vegas, but it doesn't seem like they have to have it's interchangeable parts. Aiden Hill is a no name, and he's playing well, but they are so good at playing the complete game around him. Andrew Brent says, you'd rather have the puck, give me the puck, and you can't score. Mm-hmm. They've got that. They defend well when they need to defend. It's amazing how tough they are to get a lot of good chances against. They have been clearly the better team in the last couple series that they've played. So Vegas is on the verge of doing something here in their 6th season.
Now,
they win the cup. Come on.
Willie, I remember at the very start of their franchise, I think it was Foley that got asked. It may have been the head coach at the time, but I'm pretty sure it was Foley that got asked, what's your window for a Stanley Cup? And I'm pretty positive. I want to go back and find
the owner, you mean?
Yeah. I want to go back and find it and him say 6 years, because I'm pretty positive that they said 6 years at the start.
It's redefining what an expansion expectation level is.
Yeah, because all
they've
of
been
the...
good every year. They missed the playoffs. That is something too that they did miss the playoffs
one time
last year, and so their rebound from last year to this year shows you how quickly you can turn it around if you got the right guys.
Yeah, it's you know these when you are a new team now, an expansion team now in NHL, you're almost set up to succeed. It's like, you know, being the last kid born, like being a baby after mom and dad then went through like two or three of y'all. Now when he or she is born, it's like so easy now for y'all. It's like, come on. Like, remember when we had to do this and we had to grind? This little joker, he ain't got to do none of this. Well, that's what, you know, being an expansion team in hockey is right now, because they want to make sure. The last thing you want to do is get an expansion team and they are not in a position to win at all.
That's the argument a lot of people are saying in Atlanta. Well, Atlanta failed twice. You know, they're saying, well, give Atlanta another team and another, you know, an expansion and let them have what Vegas had and Seattle had. It'll be different.
More people will go to the game.
Better ownership.
Man.
That is the argument, and there is a lot of rumor right now that someday Atlanta will get another shot.
And if you want to make this argument too, this has also been must-watch TV, and I just saw this from Jesse Granger, who covers the Golden Knights for The Athletic. He threw out there that Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final averaged 2.8 million viewers and peaked at 3.3. That's the second highest-rated Game 1 in 21 years and was the second most-watched ever on cable behind Detroit and Carolina back in 2002.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It's good. I don't know if I would say it's insane, because remember what that last line said on cable, which is there haven't been that many NHL final games on cable. It's a relative, like sometimes the NBA. NBA is now on cable sometimes, even for the finals. Uh-huh. When you're on ABC or NBC, you're just going to get more viewership on. So it's good, but I'm encouraged about those numbers for sure, because it's two, quote, non-traditional markets, which everybody's always usually concerned with, right? Like,
yes, very much so. And also, Willie, I don't know how much we want to talk about this, but there is a trade that's being finalized, the three-way trade between the Flyers, the Kings, and the Blue Jackets currently. So Ivan Provorov is reportedly being traded to the Blue Jackets. So you've got a lot of moving pieces with the Blue Jackets. Mike Babcock reportedly coming in. Ivan Provorov, a defenseman, being traded. And Cal Peterson is also one of the pieces going to the Flyers.
Ooh.
So that's an interesting little tidbit there.
I have to look more at this. Because what does that mean? That means the Kings have rid themselves of a salary that they really needed to get rid of.
They are retaining. So the reason the
Kings
are...
And they're ready to go get a goalie.
Yeah, the Kings are involved. They are going to be retaining 30% of Provorov's salary. So I find that a little intriguing for sure. Yeah.
It's another, quote, bad contract for bad contract kind of dynamic.
And defenseman Sean Walker is going the other way to the Flyers as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And a first-round pick is being traded as well. I believe it was the one acquired mid-season by the Kings, and that is going to the Blue Jackets, I think.
Okay, very good. Worthwhile news. When we come back, we'll hit on Titans OTAs, what to expect later today. D-Mace will break it down for us, and then at 1:30, Mitch Light from The Athletic joins us. We'll talk college football, the NIL, where's it going, how do coaches feel about it. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5 The Game. This week's Nashville's best deal is River Queen Voyages. River Queen Voyages is the most fun and unique way to see the downtown skyline from the water. Get half off a $50 gift card while they last at thegamenashville.com/deals. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. We're going to talk NIL coming up at 1:30. So D-Mace, at 2 o'clock, I think there's some media availability, getting ready for OTAs. I think everybody continues. Still no vibe or anything that Kevin Byard won't be there today. I guess the next question would be, if he's there, is he doing all of the drills or is he just kind of there? and doing the stretching and like you said, mm-hmm. you know, my back hurts a little bit. I got a sore.
I need a backyotomy. No.
I got a weak back. When'd you get that? Oh, about a week back. Dad jokes early. Dad jokes. Dad joke Friday on a Tuesday.
Oh man, I like that one. I wouldn't be surprised either way. I wouldn't be surprised if he's there, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's not. There is a possibility he could be there, but not participate, and it might be with the understanding from the head coach, like, okay, we understand. Sort of like Jeffrey Simmons last
year.
We know exactly why
Jeff. We're on the same page. We've agreed to this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As long as you're in the building, we're good. So it might end up being just that, but then that fuels even more speculations of what's really going on here. So it's just like him not coming to camp. So, best case scenario, obviously, is he come to camp and he's participating, and you kind of go from there. Worst case scenario, he's not there. Then you got to explain why he's not there. I don't think Kevin Byard is going to say anything, because if he was, he would have said it already. That's whether he's going to be there or not. So I think he's treating this as he should, business. This is nothing personal. I know it wasn't personal when Rand went to him or his representatives and asked for a pay cut. That wasn't personal. It was just business. And, if Byard chooses not to show up, I know it's nothing personal. Or if he chooses to show up and not go on the field, I know it's nothing personal. It's business. And until you get the business end figured out, you can't then entertain, the fans or the media that's going to be there today. So when you're a young guy, you don't think too much about the business. You just think about establishing yourself as a player in this league. The older you get, the more established you are. Then you start thinking about the business side of it. And that's why I believe Kevin Byard hadn't said anything, because he understands the business part. He's just going to let it play out.
Also, we talked early in the show about the importance for Treylon Burks to have a non-story. It's just to be a non-story, right? And not have the asthma and everything. If he gets through, how much could this be critical to his growth? Not as critical as it can be. We know it's OTAs. And at the end of the day, look, we're going to see some clips of things. It could be a clip of a guy dropping a pass. It could be a guy throwing an interception. And it gets played up way more than it should be. But you discussed earlier in the show, you do think there is value to him just being out there and continuing to build that chemistry with Ryan Tannehill to make the jump from year one to year two.
Yeah, I think because had he not shown the ability to play this game at a high level, then I think we would be a little bit unsure of him. If he came in and didn't show anything, was just, what he did was neither, something that you thought about or whatnot. So because he has shown this, you come into this season thinking, okay, it's a different season. He's one more year removed from that college world. He knows what it takes. He knows the foundation that he needs to build from a physical standpoint. We've seen glimpses of it on the field his rookie season. So you expect for him to come into camp and look like a total different person than he did his rookie year. He came in out of shape. His asthma was messing with him. His allergies was messing with him. He had injuries early on. I'm not going to even mention concussion because if he came in camp in great shape, that doesn't mean he's not going to get a concussion. That was just one of those things that happened. So you saw all of this. So you expect the next following year for it to be, amplified, because he knows what it takes to play in his league. And from what we are hearing, he and Ryan Tannehill are starting to build a good rapport. So don't look at that as, well, I'm just going to wait a little bit longer. No, look at that as, okay, that's encouraging, because we saw what he had the potential to do last year, and now he's built on it, and he's coming to camp ready. He hit the ground running, and he's shown that ability that he needs to show to play at this level, and the quarterback sees it. That's why they're building a good rapport.
One more thing I want to say before we turn the page and talk NIL. D-Mace, I watched a 30 for 30. And look, mm-hmm. I shredded ESPN's college baseball coverage yesterday. Mm-hmm. I'm still really bummed out that they have cut back on the quality of their college baseball coverage. But let me pat ESPN on the back for the 30 for 30s. They still are really, really good in that department. I watched American Gladiators yesterday. And on the surface, when you say, okay, here's a 30-30 on American Gladiators, I'm like, huh, I used to watch the show. Yeah, I remember that show. I mean, I wasn't like, hey, when is the next episode of American Gladiators? I can't wait to watch it. I wasn't into that. But if it was on in our dorm room in college, that was kind of the heyday.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, well, watch. You know, you gather around the TV and you're like, oh.
I enjoyed watching.
Cool. It was fun.
Yeah.
That story was more detailed. Mm-hmm. There's so much going on behind the scenes. I would just give that a very high recommendation. Even if you didn't watch the show and you're younger and you're like, that was not my time. We're talking about early 90s is when that show was in its heyday. It's kind of sad what happened to it. Afterwards, they tried to reboot it a couple times and it
didn't work.
Flunked. And it may come back again. It may come back again. But
I hadn't heard that word in a long time.
Yeah,
flunked.
Yeah, it wasn't good. It flopped. I don't know if I didn't even remember this. They brought it back in 2007 or 2008 mm-hmm. with Hulk Hogan as the game show host, basically.
Wow, do I remember that?
But it didn't last very long. Uh-huh. It only lasted a couple of shows. It was so bad, they scrapped it after just a few episodes. It just wasn't the same. They had to modify the games. Like, one of the issues that you would have with it now, if you were going to try to do it again, is concussions, right?
Yeah.
The collisions, the injuries that were taking place mm-hmm. on that.
Oh, man. Whew.
But it is amazing, just because the other part of it is the behind the scenes, the creation of it, where it came from. I had no idea. I don't want to spoil everything, but if you like 30 for 30s, I'm just telling you, review today.
That's a good one.
Watch American Gladiators. So, D-Mace, I'm giving you that assignment.
I will watch
because
it's
from your era as well as mine. We remember the
from
days.
Our era?
Yeah. When it was in its heyday, we remember that. But even if you didn't, you will like this stuff. It's good stuff. It's a two-parter. So, 30 for 30 on American Gladiators. Okay, when we come back, we'll talk to Bitch Light, another guy from the same era. He remembers American Gladiators, but that's not what we're going to talk about. NIL. He's with The Athletic, college football editor. Where is it going? Stay tuned. We're coming back to tell the story next. Moving forward with Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. Caroline has got the afternoon shift today, taking Jared's place and talking with our man Adam Vingan. He'll be in the long side, and just mentioned the big trade involving the Flyers, the Blue Jackets, and the Kings involving Kyle Peterson, Ivan Provorov, so a big trade, and a lot of rumors that they're going to trade Carter Hart. So there could be a hockey story or two to keep your eyes on a little bit later in the afternoon. In the meantime, we're going to talk NIL, what to do about it. It's always something we kick around during the summer. I know that Nick Saban has got some thoughts. He'd like to go to Congress, and this is a mess. I don't know how you're going to rein it in, but I just got to thinking, what do coaches think in general? Nick Saban certainly has gone public. Others have given – others maybe not so much. But really, across all sports, everybody has had to deal with it, and we know it's not going anywhere. So we wanted to call upon Mitch Light for a little perspective here. Mitch, welcome to the show.
Really glad to talk to you guys. And have you and Derek ever kind of talked to each other, two former scholarship Power 5 athletes, about who would have commanded more money on the NIL market? Has that come up? Or maybe it should come up.
Well,
I think I know what Derek's going to say.
Now, you know, Mitch, that just by virtue of the NIT championship that we won, yes. If we were to sell, if you sold all the basketballs with the entire team signature and I got like $1 per autograph or something just for being on the team, you needed to have the complete set. Maybe I could have gotten some pizza money or some beer money.
Well, I never told you this, really, but I sold your jerseys on the black market. So I should be getting a cut of that. You should have, but you had poor representation. Sorry, buddy. Man.
And it was illegal back then. I wasn't allowed.
Yeah. So I was protecting you, actually. That's why I did.
I tell the story. I went with Scott Droud to a speaking engagement one time to a business. And I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't talk. Scott did all the talking, and they handed me an envelope after it was over, and it was kind of thick. I was like, ooh, what's in this thing? Uh-huh. I was like, ooh, this is big-time college athletics. It was a Goo Goo cluster. It's like, oh, all right. I thought maybe just a roll of cash or something.
Do you remember our freshman year, Scott Drought hit 9 threes in a loss against to LSU. Maybe if he hit 10 or 11 threes in Vanderbilt one, there would have been cash in there.
Maybe. Yeah. It's too bad. Yeah. That's one of the all-time great box scores. I found it the other day. I'll send that to you, Mitch. You and I will enjoy it. It was a game on CBS. Mm-hmm. Shaquille O'Neal's freshman year, Chris Jackson. Mm-hmm. And the final score was something like
121-109.
Yep, that's exactly right. 121-109. You want to talk about
it? I would say that Chris Jackson performance in Shane Foster's senior night were the two best college basketball performances I've ever seen in person.
Yeah, you talk about some NIL possibilities for Shaq, Chris Jackson, Stanley Roberts, some of the guys on that.
I don't think they needed NIL.
They
needed it. You know what I mean?
They were getting their own NIL.
They may have been getting some version of NIL back then. Okay. So,
sorry,
Mitch, we know that Nick Saban is going to do his best to use his clout to try to bring some order into this. But I just got to thinking, and I asked you this morning when we were talking about this topic, if you could poll privately all of the coaches, and I sent this to D-Mace too, let's just focus on football for now, but I think an array of coaches, I have a suspicion, when they heard about NIL, they probably thought one thing, but if you could maybe say today, all right, guys, we thought this was going to be good, but we're going to magically make this disappear. Yes or no, would you say, I'm pushing this button to make it disappear? What percentage of coaches would say, yes, make it disappear?
90.
90?
I would say, I think it's a mess. Like you said, and I want to preface that by saying, I don't think coaches are against their players getting compensated or making money. It's just the way it has materialized through the collectives and the pay for play. Like I thought NIL was a great idea. You know, I always use this example, like Hendon Hooker at Tennessee gets to campus, not that highly regarded of a transfer. I mean, we knew who he was. He was a starter at Virginia Tech, but what he did for that school, of course he deserved to make money, how much money Tennessee makes. So go do a sponsorship with a car dealership. I'm sure the coaches at any school in a similar circumstance, that's great. But to lure kids through the transfer market, through the portal, or freshmen, the pay-for-play, no coach wants to be a part of that. It wants to be – it's just a mess. And I'd say 90, like, because most schools, like if you say there's 130 FBS schools, you know, obviously the lower end, they're not competing in that space, but I'm using the whole thing. Most of them don't want it because they don't have the money and they can't compete. Like the ones at the top, like Nick Saban, doesn't want it probably because he was dominating before it came, and now he is facing stiffer competition from new markets, so to speak. So I just think the way it's, like I said, the way it's materialized, that very, very few coaches like what they're seeing right now.
So 90%, D-Maze, do you think that would be that high? I mean, that's a high number.
I think it would be right around that number.
In its current form, where it's sort of out of control, collectives, craziness.
Yeah, I think it would be right around that number, but not to completely take it away, but revamp it.
Yes.
You know, do some things that everybody, do something in a way that everybody can benefit, meaning all these kids, not just specific kids or specific universities. Mitch, what I do want to ask you is this. And I know you remember this. This might have been, maybe 8, 9 years ago. It might have been a decade. when the Northwestern athletes, and it wasn't just football athletes, it was their athletes in general, they wanted a union. And they were, you know, getting on the news, and they made it, you know, it was this big headline. And the NCAA pushed back, Northwestern pushed back. Do you think in retrospect they shouldn't have? They should have just worked something out with the students, because they would have been able to really set guidelines back then. Because now there is no guy. It's basically the horse is out the barn, and if you can pay, then you can pay. If you can't, then so be it. That's your problem. But had they taken hold of it earlier, and not set on this sort of pedestal and the arrogance of them, you know, they should have done it a long time ago, and they wouldn't be in the position they're in now, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I'm going to answer your question with, like, a non-answer. Like, I think you're making the right point. And the reason I'm not answering it is because I don't know all the details. I don't remember all the details. Despite being an economics major in college, I don't know all the ramifications of unions and all that stuff. And it's just, quite frankly, I did not pay as close attention to that as I probably should have there. But I think your point is more that if the NCAA, or the point I'll make, if the NCAA was more proactive in this 10, 15, 20, 25 years ago, we would not be in this spot right now. Like, I don't know if it's the athletes being actual employees or not, but if there was some way they all made money, if every football player or every athlete made X amount of money. And I used to think, I've changed. I used to say, oh, there's no way that's possible. Like, the money, how could you pay the volleyball player the same as you do the football player? Well, with the TV contracts and all that stuff, there is enough money. And you can figure it out. Again, I think if they could have, would have been proactive in this and instituted something, we never would have gotten to this stage. And I think 95% of the people involved in athletics would be in a better spot right now. Now, you could say, hey, the recruits and the kids right now, they're the ones that are earning on the top end. They're in a better spot. Sure, they are. But I would like to think we could have something in place where everyone's getting some money. And then on top of that, you can actually profit off your name, image, and likeness, like the kids are who are already established stars in college.
But shouldn't they have seen this? Because after the O'Bannon, after the O'Bannon verdict, him winning, Ed O'Bannon, the brothers that played at UCLA basketball when they were winning championships, when he won, shouldn't the NCAA, they should have known, hey, listen, this thing is coming, and we can't stop it.
100%, and smart people said it at the time. They said, you know, it was one of those headlines – that for those of us that followed sports, we saw the headline, didn't really pay attention because didn't really know the ramifications. But the smart people who were involved in business and sports and law and all that, they're the ones that said, this is going to be a big deal. And it took longer than maybe some people thought, and it's become a huge deal. So, yeah, it's just one of the many criticisms that people could throw at the NCAA. But this is something that could have been averted.
And Mitch, isn't it fair to say that it's only mushroomed more since this all hit like a ton of bricks last year, right? It's now advancing quicker with, you know, state laws that are starting to set the ground rules that are maybe advantageous to the football team in that state as opposed to other states. Like, it's getting even more complicated. And I just think of a football coach who's sitting there, and you already have a million things to do beyond the practice plan for that day or the recruits that you're seeing for that day. Now you have this entire world of things that's ever-changing and very, very important that could make or break your career, right? I mean, that's why I think it's 90%. So crazy to say that, but I think it's probably realistic.
Let's keep it local here. I mean, Clark Lee in the offseason had, you know, had some good players step up. Will Shepard, guys like that. They, you know, there's no secret that they were desired on the open market, put it that way, and that they are still at Vanderbilt through some NIL efforts. And we saw the Tyron Lawrence saga play out for Jerry Stackhouse. And so it's just another layer that these coaches have to worry about is roster, is retaining the talent on their roster, and it's not just convincing kids not to transfer. It's what can you do to keep them in your school? It has. It's like you said, it's mushroomed. And the thing about it, and we get this all the time at the Athletic, and you know, I work with Ari Wasserman in recruiting and stuff. He does this mailbag. Like, how come you guys never talk about the money involved? How come you? Well, we can. They're not public record. You know, we have been fortunate enough to actually get some actual contracts for NIL on a couple high profile cases, but that's the 1% or the less than 1%. Our writers talked to coaches and high school coaches, college coaches. The money you hear is 90% of it's BS anyway. It's just you don't know what to believe. So that's another frustrating thing. Not that anyone cares, that like makes my job more difficult, but from a reporting end and talking about it, trying to be smart about it, we just don't know. And then you know how rumors take off, and everyone, someone hears a figure and they run with it. So it's just added another layer of everything because you just don't know what to believe.
Out of the 130 plus NCAA Division I football schools, how many do you think gain an advantage because they do have the deep pockets to be able to really do this right?
Okay, I don't know if this is your exact question.
Because maybe that's your 10%, right? The 10% of coaches that might say, yes, I like the NIL. You could probably figure out what schools those are, right?
I think there's probably about 10 to 12 schools that are in a better position now than they would be if everything else being equal. And I know we're probably going to go in a second, but here's a great NIL. Just how everyone thinks their own school screwed up or their fan base. Like, I deal with Audrey Snyder, who covers Penn State. And Penn State they've got three NIL collectives. They're kind of warring with each other. I mean, if Audrey could tell you stuff she's heard off the record, it's unbelievable stuff. And like, James Franklin doesn't think his school's doing enough, and everyone's just so, fans are going.
James Franklin doesn't think that he wants to move the needle further, push the envelope. No way.
But so he doesn't. So no one at Penn State thinks they're doing enough in NIL. We did a Big Ten Confidential. If you've read our Confidential series, where we talked to a bunch of high school coaches throughout either a state or a conference footprint, and all of the high school one of the questions was like, what school is like doing the best with NIL? Like, six of the eight high school coaches said it was Penn State, that they're organized, they've got their ducks in a row, and all this stuff. And I was just flabbergasted because then I hear from the other side. So that's just one example of you just don't know what to believe.
It's complicated for sure, and some of it's out of a coach's control, right? Coaches love to have control, organized. I know exactly what's happening, and you're not supposed to know what's exactly happening with the collectives.
Exactly. In theory, you're not allowed to. Just think, we talk about football so much, but think about a basketball. You know, you got, and I'm not talking about Vanderbilt or Jerry Stackhouse and Tyron Lawrence specifically, but if you think you got a good team coming back next year, and then the day of the transfer portal is about to close, one of your players leaves because someone's gotten his ear. And you're like, okay, I've got, it's not an 85-man football roster, it's a 13-man roster. And then like, what do you do? I understand their frustration. No one's shedding tears for these coaches. They make a ton of money. But, they want to win. It's their livelihood, and they put a lot into it. So I get where their frustration comes from.
Yeah, it has to be frustrating. And then, it has to be frustrating from, the coaching end of it for the kids that are not making the NIL money, and they're seeing all the kids that are. They look at it as, listen, we're doing exactly what they're doing, but we're not getting paid for it. We're working just as hard as they are. But that's just the way of college sports now. It's run like a professional league. And you're going to have the haves and the have nots.
That's another headache for the coach.
It's like what I am interested in, because it's maybe just with the sort of 1% kids that are getting these huge deals, then you got to bring in some type of financial person, guy or girl. How do you stop it from being affiliated with an agent or an agency? It's just so much stuff that kind of goes into this that I don't even think the NCAA even thought about it. Or if they did, they just don't care.
Collateral damage, just things you don't think about. I'm fascinated, just like you guys are, where we're going to be in 2 years, where we're going to be in 5 years on all this. With the transfer portal and NIL, college athletic, no sport has changed more in the past, 18, 24 months than college sports.
No doubt. Mitch, good stuff. Thanks a lot, as always, for coming on. We'll talk to you down the road, and let's look back on NIL 1990s. What could have been? What could have been?
I'll run some numbers to figure out what you were worth back then.
Yeah, and then D-Mace will do the study on Michigan State as well.
Exactly.
Okay, yeah.
We'll do a comparison.
See you guys.
All right, see you later. All right, when we come back, we'll tell you who's on the field, who's not on the field for the Titans at minicamps. It's going on right now. There'll be some media availability a little bit later. Caroline and Adam Vingan are coming along at 2 o'clock, so they'll have more detail on that as well. Stay tuned. You're listening to Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace.
Back at you. The last couple of minutes here on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. Man, just got finished talking about that NIL. And boy, oh boy, it's a mess right now. And hopefully they can situate it all out, Willie. Titans are on the field.
They're on the field. We have now the list of who's there, who's not. But I know
a lot of people have been a Kevin Byard spotting. Yep.
And
he's out on the field.
Full participant. Participating. Not just on the side.
Exactly. So those that wonder, even us here on this show and the shows across our station, we wondered whether Kevin Byard was going to be there today. If he was he going to be participating? Well, our answers, our questions have been answered. Kevin Byard is out there. He is participating. I saw a few of Teron Davenport's tweets, and it said as much as that. He's out there breaking up passes, doing what Kevin Byard does, being the professional and the leader that he has been throughout his career. So those that worried about whether Kevin Byard was going to be there, us included, he is there today. He is a full participant in today's camp OTA. So you can take a sigh of relief, and hopefully the whole saga of him taking a pay cut, hopefully they remedied that, and they've moved on from that, and he can get back to, you know, playing a ball that he's used to playing. So
notables that are not on the field: Christian Fulton, not there; Elijah Molden, Harold Landry, not a surprise there.
No, that's not a surprise at all.
Taking it slow. Caleb Farley, not a surprise there. Dylan Radins, we know. But Fulton. Elijah Molden's the other one. I just think, man, if there's a guy that really would like to prove that he's past the injury stuff that just completely derailed his whole season last year, that's a guy that would love to be out there, and he's not. Fulton's the one we've discussed a lot before. What do we make of that?
Yeah, I mean, is it because of the injury he's not out there? He wasn't at any of the
Right. Supposedly he had his own guy, right? Not at the OTAs.
Not at the OTAs. He was in Miami working out, and I don't fault him for that. Mini camp. Voluntary camps.
Yeah.
He wasn't there. I don't fault him for that. He was in Miami working out because he understands that this is the last year. You know, it's just going to his contract year, and he has to make sure he's ready. But why he's not out on the field, I don't know. I'm sure that will be asked today at the podium from, the coach will be asked that or some other players. So I would love to see what the reason is. What is their reason why he's not out on the field? We can tell a lot by the answers we are going to get, because I'm sure the head coach will be asked about
it. Yeah, there's going to be some media later in the show. You're going to want to stay tuned for that. I see Andre Dillard is talking to some media people as well. That's a guy that's an important question mark to see if he can solidify himself.
Absolutely.
Alongside of Skoronski, the first round pick. That would really be nice if things fall together with those two guys on the left side of the line, and maybe Aaron Brewer taking that center job, so you feel better about what they've got to offer as an offensive line. It was not a strength, as we know, last year. It's crumbled with injuries. So these are all things to look for that we won't get the answers in the next few days while these go on, but you'll hope to have a better feeling about it if you're the coaching staff.
Exactly. So I'm sure there will be a lot of questions and answers. I'm sure Byard will be asked some questions as well.
Yeah, I'm curious if he talks a lot today.
Talks, yeah.
Maybe he will, maybe he won't. I don't know.
Yep. So, it's out. He's out there, and, I guess Is it move on to the next story, or is it still this? And maybe right. we will find that out today once these questions are asked. Is that still
is
out there?
Is there clarity? Yeah. Is there clarity on the contract?
Exactly.
Is it going to stay as is? Mm-hmm. Does he have that assurance from the team? That is the question.
Yeah, it is.
It's one thing for him to be out there practicing, mm-hmm. but the real question is the contract. Is there still a chance that something could be changed with it, or are they just sticking with it as is with that big cap figure?
Well, you figure they got to do something, you know, because they're up against it on the cap. Now, if she wants to pay out of her pocket, the owner, for, you know, someone that they can bring in here that can help this team, you know, that may be a, you know, big ticket guy, then that's something that the organization has to talk about. But, you know, if you, where are you getting monies from? You know, you went to Kevin Byard and it seems like that was a no. Have you gone to Derrick Henry and asked him after you've, you know, sort of you sort of gave him a pay raise last year in a sense? Or do you go to Ryan Tannehill, who honestly is being underpaid? So do you ask him to take a pay cut even more? I don't know. Maybe they just stay put and hope for no injuries and just play with the team that they have now, meaning, you know, once they make their 53-man roster, they move forward with that team, and they're not bringing in any big-ticket guys. So we'll see.
I've seen a lot of different players in front of a camera talking mm-hmm. on the field. Mm-hmm. None of them named Kevin Byard, so okay. It doesn't look like he's going to talk unless they put him on the podium later, which I don't see any evidence that they are, but that doesn't mean it wouldn't happen. So we'll keep an eye on that. May not be the day to do that. So that's going to do it for us. Stay tuned. Caroline and Adam Vingan will have the show starting at 2 here on Stillman & Company. D-Mace and I are back at you tomorrow. We're going to be on a little earlier tomorrow, starting at 10 with the team out there on the golf course. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow's our big charity golf tournament to help Souls for Souls. We're looking forward to that out at the Hermitage. So D-Mace, good show.
Absolutely. So listen, be love and love on somebody, people. Peace.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.